are back with episode 809 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and some of these shows are really starting to crank up now.
Yes, indeed they are, as we have a lot of shows that are hitting their season finales or very close to them. And we also have, a full schedule. This particular week was 20 shows, 20 episodes. We actually had at least one person watch 19 of those 20 shows, at least one
God person bless
19
them.
Of them. Not everyone watching all 19, but anyway. It was just a packed week. This is a couple weeks ago, so I don't know the exact date. Maybe, I guess it would have been the 16th is when the week would have ended that included these episodes.
Yeah. That sounds like a prime time for me to throw in our spoilers. Gosh, you must have seen these by now. So please, we should not be surprising you at all. And if we are, shame, shame, shame. If you like these shows, you should have been watching them by now. Yes, I know the summer's coming in that you're just going to binge through at least three of these shows coming up. In that case, put us on pause. Otherwise, just keep listening through and agree with everything we say.
That's right. Being with us is usually a good idea. All right, and so we are going to jump into it now that we have had our disclaimer. Usually what we do is the bottom three, then the top three, and then we talk about a couple of the shows in between that are particularly of our enjoyment. So let's go ahead and start. I have a lot to say about these, the ones at the bottom, because Gary, for better or worse, did not see them.
I chose wisely, yes.
You did choose wisely in a couple cases. So the very first one here is down here. I will say that the shows went from a 6.5 all the way up to a 9.17. So we had a very nice distribution here. This particular show came in at a 7.5, and it is Class, Series 1, Episode 5, Bravish Heart. April confronts Cora... forget it. I'm not even going to bother trying to read these names. and there's a reason why I'm not going to bother reading these names. This was the last episode of this show that I watched. I just had to take this off of my schedule because after 5 episodes out of 8, I just found I didn't really care. The characters just aren't really engaging me. It seems like they're trying to force the teenage humor a little bit. They're definitely pushing certain things that just... There's this whole undercurrent in this episode, for instance, where the parents are kind of clueless and getting in the way, and yet... It's like, okay, you have a bunch of teenagers sitting there saying, we're trying to save the world, get out of our way, parents, why are you bugging us about what we're up to? Yeah, but these same teenagers are also getting crippled. Literally, one of them is crippled by what happens. I think perhaps the parents have a right to be a little concerned and engaged. So the whole attitude of, you know, rebellious teenagers just doesn't really work for me here. The one thing that was really working for a little while was the fact that these were people who were living in the modern Doctor Who era. And so the whole idea of how you survive when there's a freaking threat to the entire planet every other week, there was a little bit of interest there. But yeah, this show just isn't working for me.
I'm an episode behind you on this, so I didn't score it. But yeah, it's hard to watch. Usually, I guess the personalities of the actors can sometimes get you over a story, but I just don't feel it at all from these people.
I don't either. It feels very much like they are... I don't feel like I really know these characters. And so when they have an episode, for instance, and it's the next one, but as I said, I didn't finish it, so I'm not even going to get into it next week. But I tried watching the next one where the characters act out of character for a reason, and I don't know them well enough to care that they're acting differently. And that's just, you know, we've talked a little bit about the fact that we're going to be a lot less, feel a lot less, you know, like we have to watch something just to finish it out. This is one of those shows. I sat down, I had the time, I'm caught up. I had the time to go ahead and watch the next episode after this of Class, and I just didn't want to. And that's a pretty bad sign when it's a Doctor Who spinoff. I like Doctor Who a lot. I've watched practically everything that's available. I just couldn't do. And it's unfortunate, like I said, because it had a lot of potential to be Doctor Who meets Buffy in that kind of quirky Scooby Gang type of thing. But there's an energy missing, too. I don't know if you felt that way as well. There's something missing. It's like episodes feel like they're 3 hours long.
It doesn't feel like the cast wants to be there.
And that's, and yeah, that's actually, that's you're just bad. Yeah. Wrong. Yeah. So I've dropped it off of my list. I mean, we'll see if it pops up as more time allows, but quite frankly, I have other things that I want to watch or even rewatch that, this just gets pushed out of the way for. So down, also on the bottom three, we have Designated Survivor, Season 1, Episode 20, Bombshell. President Kirkman's first international summit is derailed when journalist Abe Leonard publishes an explosive article. This got a dead average 7, and it's the same problem that I've been having with the back episodes of this season since they came, and since they basically started with the additional episodes that were tacked on. They feel tacked on. And there is a big, wide divide between the conspiracy elements and the aspirational presidential aspects. They're just not meshing the way that they did at the beginning of the series. They really need to take a look at this when they come back next year. Both of those still did better than the show at the bottom of the list, and that is Prison Break, Season 5, Episode 7, Wine Dark Sea. Sarah becomes fearful of her family's safety when she discovers the real reason that Michael faked his own death. This came in at a 6.5, and it's just really disappointing that there are so many plot holes and contrivances, and I'm saying that about Prison Break. Okay, that is a show that basically lived on its plot holes and contrivances and the fact that they were actually entertainingly hilarious. But this is not unlike Class, where it's like you were saying, Gary, it feels like they convinced the cast to come back and they were initially having fun with it, and now they're just trying to get done. Yeah, the story isn't doing it for me. The energy isn't there. That was the one thing I really liked about Prison Break, is that every week you weren't sure what you were going to get into, but all the characters felt like a family, and you had a sense of their ongoing struggles to stay together, and yet they're back together, and I think they waited too long. I think that might have been it, because it is just not the same energetic show that it used to be. It's way too methodical in its pacing. So, yeah, 6.5. This one I actually am trying to see to the end, as much as it's one of the last things that I watch every week, only because I want to see how they reconcile the end of this show with what we already know about the story and how it was supposedly going to end.
Hmm.
Are they going to end this on a definitive note, or are they going to try and pull a cliffhanger like they did with the X-Files revival? Worked for the X-Files revival because it's actually coming back with even more episodes. I can't believe that happened. I cannot in a million years believe that Prison Break could come back after this. This feels like the hero. You know how Heroes Reborn?
Oh, yeah. I feel my appendix twitch, and I don't even have it anymore. Yeah,
it's twitching in the jar somewhere, and you can still feel it kind of thing. Yeah, this feels more like that, unfortunately. And I'll hasten to add, Heroes Reborn ended on a cliffhanger too, because they apparently thought it was going to fly. I don't know. But those are our bottom three for that week, and now we can turn our attention to far better fare up at the top of the list. Coming in our number three slot with an average of 8.83 is Supergirl, Season 2, Episode 21, Resist. Supergirl grapples with whether or not to obey the president's orders regarding Rhea's latest actions. Yeah, we have quite a lot of comments here. Not comments, but scores. Henry gave this one a 9.5. He enjoyed this one quite a bit. Gary, you gave it an 8.5, as did I. So what were your thoughts on this episode?
Well, I enjoyed seeing Cat back, actually. I didn't think that I would... I didn't think I would miss her character, and I can't say that I've missed her throughout the course of the season, but having her back there again felt really good. Maybe it's just part of the original formula that I latched onto, but she fell right back into place so easily and was just a pleasure to have the character interact with everyone else again. That I really enjoyed seeing her back. That being said, I'm not surprised that Kara did what she did. I think they've pretty much set up her character that we knew exactly what was going to happen. So in a sense, it was a little bit leading because we knew that Kara was going to break what the president said and go onto the ship. The continued hand-to-hand combat with the Daxamites always seems to confuse me. I'm sort of confused about their power levels. You know, at some point, Rhea seems extremely strong, almost Kryptonian levels. And other times, I see some of these guys that they can, like, get pushed around pretty easily. So the inconsistency of power levels just always scratches my head a little bit with how they're portraying Daxamites. So, It just seems so staged and contrived, or just just typical, wrote that I wanted to like it more, but within a minute and a half, I knew where the show was going, and I still had to watch another 45 minutes of it. So.
Yeah, I think the cat was definitely the thing that rose this one up to a higher level for me. I did miss it. And I think what brought that on was that earlier on in this season, they did at least replace her with somebody else. But I don't know about you, but it felt like her... I even forget the guy's name.
Snapper Carr?
Yeah, he just kind of fell into the background. Almost like the whole thing of her being a journalist and so forth almost disappeared for big chunks of the season. So for Kat to come back was fun. She seemed even more on point than she was before. And I felt like Kat started to bring together some of the things that this season was trying to say, and it almost worked well to have her come in and make a lot of biting observations about it. Not only that, but I mean, it was really interesting how many shots they were taking politically in this episode.
It was pretty blatant.
Yeah, incredibly blatant. At the same time, it was done a little more tongue-in-cheek, I felt, than it was in previous episodes. They didn't hold back, but it reminded me a little bit of the way that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has been taking shots politically, almost. Where it's a one line here, one line there, but here Kat kind of came in and she's got such a reputation for being just no filter, speaking her mind, that you weren't surprised by some of the things she was coming out with. So I thought that it worked out well in that way. And yeah, I think the only thing that was really inconsistent here was that the Daxamite power level is, it varies according to the needs of the plot.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. But hey, a good penultimate episode for Supergirl. It was good to see it kind of rise to the occasion, so to speak. In our number two position, we have The Leftovers, season 3, episode 5. It's a Matt world. Matt heads to Australia to bring Kevin home when he's convinced he should be in Miracle for the 7th anniversary of the departure. And Edmund and I both gave this one a 9. Just to go over Edmund's comments here, very strong episode, finally focusing on the characters swirling around the maelstrom of the Kevins. For all its weirdness and eccentricity, the conflicts and growth of all the main characters have been both remarkable and believable. I'll be sad to say goodbye to them at the end. Yes, and for me, it was... really, this was an episode with a lot of strange, surreal moments, and yet you still had a lot of symbolism involved with the character of Matt and how adrift he feels. And yeah, it was just a really nice layered episode. And The Leftovers is not an easy show to watch. I'm the first to admit that. And yet this really felt like this season just feels like it is bringing the journey of this series to a fitting conclusion. I don't think it's going to be a happy conclusion, but it's going to be a fitting one. What's very odd is that the second season was such a dark season that I would watch an episode and I almost felt like I needed therapy afterwards. This season is not quite there, yet it still feels like it's the same series in many respects. It's just the next and final step in the journey that everyone's taking. But it's fitting where everybody is falling here, as Edmund said. It makes a lot of sense where these journeys are going, and it's going to be interesting to see how they wrap it up. I have a feeling that it could be a little controversial, but this is, after all, a Damon Lindelof show. However, this show has been so steeped in spirituals, type of undercurrents and themes, that maybe what he comes up with for the final episode of The Leftovers will feel a little bit less out of left field than some people felt about the ending of another show about souls that were in search of meaning. I won't say it. For your sake, my friend.
As well, you should not. Anyway.
Moving on then to our number one show, and that would be American Gods, Season 1, Episode 3, Head Full of Snow. Shadow questions his job when Mr. Wednesday informs him of his plan to rob a bank, and just when Shadow thought life couldn't get more complicated, he discovers something surprising in his motel room. Indeed, and this show came in at an average, as I said earlier, of 9.17. Nadim, giving it a 9.5, says, "The show's strongest episode yet. Fantastic." Edmund says, Well, I said myself that from the lovely opening sequence with Anubis to the faithful adaptation of the encounter with the Djinn to the Checkers rematch, this show is exactly how an adaptation should be done. And I read that out from my notes because Edmund says I can't really add to what John said. I'll just confirm that this adaptation is hitting all the right notes for someone who just read the book recently, so it's still fresh in my mind. That's a hard feat to pull off. Yes, but the opening to this particular episode in particular for me was the thing that set the tone, because I started watching this and I was kind of in an odd headspace at the time, and it really struck me as the word that hit was beautiful. It really was. The performances, the tone of it, the musical score, it just made sense. And this is a show that changes tone and literally every few minutes. You could be dealing with something that is very somber, something that is deeply comedic, something that is just blatantly sexual. It changes tone and mood all the time, and yet it still feels like it's part of a cohesive whole. And that's very much like the novel. So I feel like this is a really strong adaptation, and it makes sense for it to be up at the top of our list. It's not an easy show to watch. There are some people that feel very turned off by some of the things that are going on, but the novel itself really challenged you in terms of what it was presenting you. After all, this is, at the end of the day, a story about the old gods warring with the new modern gods of Western society. So, and then the fact that it's kind of, you know, the American road trip as seen through the eyes of Neil Gaiman, that says a lot. He is known for kind of pushing boundaries. So, definitely also doing it here in this adaptation. I think that it is a really nicely done adaptation, to say the least. So Gary, is there anything else that's here on our list that you would like to go over while we have the opportunity?
Yeah, let's close out the Marvel Universe, at least the TV version for this season, and talk about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Sounds good, because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. just missed the top three. It's literally our number four show for the week, and that would be Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 4, Episode 22, World's End. In the Season 4 finale, Ghost Rider emerges suddenly, and Coulson and the team attempt to stop Ada from ending the world. This came in at an average of 8.67, so definitely well above average. Edmund and I both had some comments, but Gary, you gave it the highest score of a 9.
Oh, geez. I like this. I like this a lot. There's a bunch of different reasons. Let's see. I like how Fitz really came back all the way. I figured they were going to drag him through at least a half a season of Moper, unsure of his loyalties. And I enjoy how much, you know, he bounced back and fought back. The whole, you know, Ghost Rider switching to Coulson really shocked the heck out of me. I did not see that. I didn't see that coming at all. I mean, we saw him come back, but I didn't think it was going to be in that way. That was really interesting. We got ourselves yet another cliffhanger ending again. And thankfully, we know it's been renewed. Otherwise, I would have really been scratching my head. But it looks as if they're in space this time, which, you know, in the back of my head, wow, wait, the Infinity War is coming up. And that's definitely going to be something to do with space. With the Guardians of the Galaxy involved and everything. So, maybe space is a little bit of territory, definitely for pimping the other movies it will be. So that's quite interesting, and we haven't had any real exposure to that in the series, although in the comic books, S.H.I.E.L.D. has been, you know, had space stations and things like that for years. So that's definitely pulling in some original source material. Other than that, I was a little sorry. Obviously, I don't think we ever got Ward back. I was hoping some of this technology that Ada had come up with would have maybe revitalized Trip, but we didn't get that either. So there was some downbeats, but overall it was a fast, positive, moving episode. It dealt well with Ada, I thought, and for all intents, at least as far as I can tell, definitely takes her off the game board, so we don't really have to worry about her anymore. It's definitely a final kind of ending, I believe. So overall, everything looks good. The Darkhold's under control. The killer alien robot who became human is dead. The technology that she made everything with seems to be not able to work without the Darkhold. At least that's how I sort of viewed it. Now we just have the framework, which I believe is still existing, as far as I can tell, or at least it's still possible to make it happen again. So I'm not sure about that. We could use a little bit more conclusion. But overall, it was a thrilling ending, and they really set us up for next season, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm fairly sure that the framework is gone, because I think that's what was going on with Radcliffe, where he just kind of, he was watching the world just kind of die. And also that's where Mac was kind of racing against time to get out. But I don't think that it was incredibly clear. I think that it was one part that was a little bit...
Well, I just wasn't sure if it was actually... I mean, I know that they that they couldn't flick it back on again.
Right.
That's, I wasn't sure.
But you never know. So Edmund says, giving it an 8.5, hard to maintain the intensity of the last few episodes as the framework grinds to a halt. Bringing Ghost Rider back did tie the two halves together nicely and made sense given the Darkhold being central to the whole plot. Coulson in space... definitely tacked on, and the speculation about S.W.O.R.D. doesn't seem possible with their reduced budget. And finally, have to give a tip of the hat to Kurt from Calgary, who said that for the loss of Bill Paxton and Powers Booth so close to each other and so young, he blames Ward. That's a good place to go. That's the one thing I was surprised at. I was sure they were going to find a way to bring the Ward from within the framework into the actual universe.
Well, I wasn't sure. Yeah, Ward. Well, I thought if Mac stayed in, maybe they would have brought Trip back out somehow. But yeah, when we got Mac back, I had a sense we weren't going to get Trip. So yeah, Ward would have been nice. But I have to say, for this, you know, as we're closing out the season for the show, him popping up again was really nice and refreshing. And this is now the third time they brought him back from death. So I can't wait to see how they pull it off next time.
Yes, I'm sure they'll do it again. But yeah, that was definitely an interesting thing. I took a little bit off. I thought it was really good, but I have to be honest, Yo-Yo is not a big favorite of mine. There's just something about her that I consider her to kind of be the lowest on the list as far as my favorite characters. So for there to be so much of her in this finale, it just wasn't material I particularly enjoyed. It also felt like it really was meant to almost be a final episode for the series, and that the stuff with Coulson in space definitely felt like they kind of had that waiting just to see. Because if you think about it, if they didn't do that part, they could have ended the series.
Oh yeah, and neatly. Yeah, very neatly.
It definitely felt like they kind of inserted that in as something that they put together just in case they got renewed. And that kind of made it feel a little bit less than organic, but yeah, at the same time, it was a really strong final episode, considering this season, the fourth season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was, I think, may have been their best one. They did a really good job with this, and I'm trying to go back and look right now. If I go to the ratings that we gave the show, just a hair right now, without taking the finale into account, it's just a hair below the second season. So... it's definitely one of the better seasons that they've had.
Oh yeah, I think the villains were strong. A lot of the emotional content was very well written and delivered. So yeah, as we were talking about the uncertainty of their renewals, I really didn't feel it was for the lack of the material presented.
Yeah, they definitely did a really solid job. And quite frankly, right now the show is in our top 10, so that says a lot. Considering some of the other shows that it's up against. Let's see here. I would like to just go ahead and talk a little bit about Doctor Who.
Sure.
That would be Doctor Who, Series 10, Episode 5, Oxygen. The Doctor and his crew get stuck in a spaceship and battle killer spacesuits. And this one came in at an average of 8. Dead on 8. Now, Edmund came in with an 8.5, saying, definitely feeling its feet again, and an intriguing critique of future space-based capitalism. Has Moffat been watching The Expanse, I wonder? Interesting thought there. I also gave it an 8.5, and for similar reasons. I thought that the capitalism critique was pretty strong, there were some other cool ideas involved, and boy, it ended on a very interesting note that I wasn't sure where they were going with. Of course, now it's been a couple weeks since this came out, so I kind of know where they're going with it, and I don't mind it nearly at all. But this one, of course, for again, spoiler, the Doctor is blind at the end. And I thought that was an interesting way to go, to have there be lasting consequences. But Gary, one of the reasons that I wanted to talk about this one is that you gave this a dead average 7.
Yeah, I thought it was a little too preachy, honestly. I mean, I know they've always, you know, that they do make commentary in a variety of ways about, you know, population, resources, human rights. And it's not that I'm averse to it, but geez, this, it just seems so heavy handed to me that it took me out of the enjoyment of the movie. I mean, of the show. They don't usually pound. It's very rare that they pound issues this hard, and it was a little over the top for me. Capaldi, I've had issues with him since he started, and this episode just didn't do much for me. I just had a hard time. I've had a hard time watching him lately, and I'll be the first to admit it. I don't want to not miss out on something of, you know, Whovian importance, but I'm looking forward to his tenure to be over, and I make no two birds about it. I don't hate the man. It's just I don't enjoy the performances, and you can feel a little sympathetic to him, but it's not going to last that long, so. We'll wait and see what happens. If they actually kept him blind, at least till regeneration, that would be, you know, something.
Well, yeah, that would be something.
I don't expect it, though.
I'm not gonna spoil future beyond this one episode, but I feel like there is a purpose to what's being going on.
Okay.
So, it's interesting that it may be something that is resolved, but it may be a very bad thing that it's resolved the way that it is. So it's an ongoing storyline, let's put it that way. So, but yeah, I can understand that. If you're not a fan of Capaldi, they're not doing anything right now to really transcend that. And I've said before, my personal opinion of Bill as a companion is that this is another episode where I don't feel like she really added a lot to the table. And I can see how, okay, you don't like Capaldi, but maybe you liked the companion at the time. Maybe you liked
Yes.
Clara.
Yeah. Like for example, it took me a while to warm up to Clara, but I didn't care for, Matt Smith quite that much when he started, but the character did grow on me. But yeah, this, neither one is really, working for me this season, so I don't want to dwell on it. I know some people very much enjoy his performance and feel that it harkens back to some of the earlier Doctors, and I'm fine with that too. It's just, you know, as everyone's entitled to their opinion, then ideally the next regeneration's coming, so I'll be patient, but let people get out what they want. As hard as it is to believe, I've heard of, some fans didn't like Tennant, felt he played it a little too loose. Some people thought Smith was, over the top clown, buffoonish. And
everybody's got their preferences. And I know that we disagree on this one, and that's fine. That's actually good. Because this is the kind of franchise where they change things up so often that you can.
Everybody wins.
Yeah, you can have eras that are just not the one person's liking, but you know that things are always going to change, right? So I agree that I particularly like Capaldi, but I have to say that for me, this, and I know many people who are saying that this is their favorite season for him yet, and I don't know where they're coming from that from, because I just don't feel that way at all. I feel like this is easily the worst of the three seasons for him, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that I don't feel a particular chemistry with the companion that he had with Clara. And what's odd is that there are some people, and I think maybe even you feel this way, that felt that Clara was a better match with the 11th Doctor. And yeah, so it's all a matter of chemistry and how you particularly like the character stuff. I didn't think that I'd feel this way because I didn't really like the character of Nardole all that much. I'm finding I like him better even than Bill. Bill just doesn't do anything for me. Honestly, it feels almost like they don't give her a personality so that you can kind of imprint anything you want on her. And that's fine and all, but it just doesn't work for me. Let's see, how much time do we have left in this? Well, we can start wrapping this one up unless there was another show that you wanted to talk about. Or we can just kind of pick it up as we go, a few comments here and there.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. We have also on the list this week, Riverdale Season 1, Episode 13, The Sweet Hereafter, the first season finale, which came in at an 8.5. We have Better Call Saul Season 3, Episode 6, Off-Brand, which Edmund gave an 8.5. We have The Flash, Season 3, Episode 22, Infantino Street, which came in at an 8.5. And Gary, boy, you like this one a lot.
Oh, well, geez, I was surprised Barry would go to these lengths to save Iris. It was really surprising. I love the throwback in the title to Carmen Infantino, a very famous Flash artist who definitely, I would say, not only helped create the modern Flash, but definitely was his signature artist for over 20 plus years. You know, quite an amazing man. If you look back at any of the early 60s into 70s Flash comic books, that's his art. He was the Flash artist for decades. That being said, while they definitely played fast and free with linking up Barry with Snart to make that time happen, I enjoyed it a great deal. And Snart plays so well off Barry's, I don't want to say naivety, but definitely his innocence, that it's almost like a, you know, I guess a joke in a straight man kind of thing, where they work so well that it was really nice to see them back together again, even in under these extremely odd circumstances. Also, I enjoyed how it showed Snart, you know, we've seen glimmers of it before, but where, you know, there is some good in him, or at least some not despicable evil, and that was nice to see as well. So it was good to have him back visiting the show again. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, it's always fun to have Snart around, that's for sure. One of my favorite characters that kind of refer to all the time around. Well, yeah, when I was at the Zenkai Con a couple of weeks ago, or a few weeks ago, you know, it's more of a general con, although it does have a very heavy anime side to it. And, yeah, somebody was saying, like, you know, character, you know, matches or mashups and stuff like that. And so one of them was, like, Snart at the anime con. And so I just break into, like, an impression of the way that the character speaks. And it's just fun to listen to him talk and to chew the scenery. He just has such a good time.
I'm waiting for you to do cosplay, John, I tell you. That would be fun. It's an easy costume. Well, you need some parka. Yeah, parka and glasses. There you go.
It's a little warm for Dragon Con. But yeah, it's just, he's a fun character. I really miss having him around. And so, like you said, any time that he shows up on the show is just a real fun time. Let's see here. From there, we have Arrow, Season 5, Episode 21, Honor Thy Fathers, which got an 8.25. We have The Americans, Season 5, Episode 11, Dyatkovo, which got an 8.25. We have Supernatural, Season 12, Episode 21, There's Something About Mary, which came in at an 8. The original, Season 4, Episode 8, Voodoo in My Blood, also got an 8. Into the Badlands, Season 2, Episode 9, Nightingale Sings No More, got an 8. The 100, Season 4, Episode 11, The Other Side, came in at 7.5. Outcast, Season 2, Episode 7, Alone When It Comes, got a 7.5, as did iZombie, Season 3, Episode 7, Dirt Nap Time. So yes, a nice full week, and when we come back next time, we will have yet another week's worth of episodes, and boy, do we have some big ones to talk about. So until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.